Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. We're about to start off in a couple of moments, and we already got major breaking news that we're going to get right into once the show kicks off. And here we go. Welcome to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Tufts Free Farm Radio. We're here on a special edition Friday night. Hope you are having a safe commute home wherever you may be. And however you may be getting home on this Friday evening. I'm here with you guys until 8 o'clock tonight. You can call into the show at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. Let's be honest. It's fall. Baseball is still in effect. And clearly, baseball hasn't and wasn't ready to disappear into the fall abyss. I was going to start the show by talking Patriots, but even the Patriots for once is going to have to take a back burner. It's going to have to take a back burner to the major breaking news that happened within the last half hour, 45 minutes, as it pertains to the Boston Red Sox. And I'm joined live in studio with a very familiar guest. Some of you may remember from September 7th, when the Shukri Wright Show used to be on from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., Saturday mornings, but I am beyond happy and thrilled and excited to welcome back my friend and special guest for the entire two-hour show, the Sports Professor. Sports Professor, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Suki. It's great to be here again. We're going to have some fun today, folks.
Absolutely. And listen, let's get right to it. The Boston Red Sox have officially hired a new general manager. Now, pardon me if I somehow botch up the first name, because it's a unique first name with all due respect, but this new general manager, his name is Chaim Bloom. I myself have no idea as to who this guy is and what he brings to the table. Here's what's interesting. The number one thing that's interesting about it is that this is a guy who supposedly comes from the whole school of analytics. Some of you may like it. Some of you may not like it. And the fact of the matter is the Red Sox supposedly did their due diligence in looking into Chaim Bloom as being the right fit for the general manager job in a major market that is Boston. Now, for those that are just tuning in, the Boston Red Sox, within the past hour, have officially hired Chaim Bloom as the new general manager of the Boston Red Sox. You can call into the show at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. He had been previously with the Tampa Bay Rays organization since 2005, when they were known previously as the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And he is now the new head of baseball operations as well. And he feels a vacancy that was opened up by the firing of former baseball of operations president Dave Dombrowski in early September. And guys like Eddie Romero, Brian O'Halloran, and Zach Scott, they all shared the duties for the remainder of the 2019 season. And he's originally from Philadelphia, went to Yale University, and graduated in 2004. Now, as I turn to my partner, the sports professor, I got to start by asking you this following question. The question I have for you is this. When you first heard the news, what were your initial thoughts? And do you think the Red Sox got it right with the right hire for the right guy that has the long-term vision that this franchise needs, and as well as the short-term balls as well?
To be honest with you, I have no idea, because I had never heard of the guy. After doing research on him, Andrew Friedman brought him in at Tampa, and the Red Sox wanted to get Andrew Friedman because his contract was up with the Dodgers, and he re-signed there. This was his protege. So they think they're getting a younger, cheaper version of Andrew Friedman. He's the one that pushed the opener idea on Tampa. It was his idea to do that stupid thing with the opener, I think. But anyway, he gets people very cheap. They made a great trade. Apparently, he was one of the orchestrators of trading Archer to Pittsburgh for Glasnow and Meadows, which was an absolute steal for Tampa.
Yeah.
And he gets people like Joe Manchow, that was very cheap to get. And the Red Sox are looking to pair payroll, and this guy can find guys on the cheap end.
Mm-hmm.
He's young. He's only 36. Very young to take over a job like this, but very well respected. Whether they got it right or not, we're not going to know for a couple of years down the road, obviously. I have no clue. He's an up-and-comer, and they're taking a shot. They're going from a big-name GM when they got Dombrowski that everybody knew.
Yeah.
They'd been with Miami, Detroit, all around. Now they're bringing in an unknown, but somebody that's very well respected in the industry. That's all I know about him.
And, you know, when I look at Bloom, and let's face it, and I'm with you, he's a guy who we don't know much about, other than he had been with the Tampa Bay Rays for several years, going back to 2005. And I can't help but wonder, if you're the Boston Red Sox, what were some of the criteria that they had in terms of what they wanted in their next general manager? I'm not sitting here saying that it was a good hire, it was a bad hire. But the thing that leaves me with a little bit of trepidation is this. They know, their organization, that they're entering arguably the most important offseason in 15 years as an organization, because they have a whole list of critical decisions that they need to make. One of them being, and this is going to be the first question I'm going to pose to you, one of them being, what are they going to do to get under the luxury tax? But what are some of the things that they're going to have to do? Because this is something that Bloom is going to have to make enormous decisions that's going to impact the organization both now and as well as in the long term. You had a guy who was very short-term driven for the last 3-4 years, and now he's gone. You got your championship out of it, but you have no farm system. So my question to you is, do you think that Bloom is a guy who can build that farm system to where it needs to be, in which that would help the Red Sox sustain being able to compete for championships year after year?
I think they're going in the opposite direction. Dombrowski got him a championship right away, which he's done other places. Blew up the farm system, and let's win now. I think they're looking to do the exact opposite now. Get a guy who built up Tampa's farm system, takes the slow, methodical approach. How they're going to pair $40 million off the payroll when new contracts for Bogarts and Sale kicking next year, I have no idea how they're going to do that.
Yeah,
he's a big guy for the farm system. So if he's going to pair all that payroll, the Red Sox aren't going anywhere next year.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, if that's what's going to happen. But he's supposedly going to be one that's going to build up a more sustainable farm system, because they don't have much down there now. They have very little. There's not much to bring up except Dahlback, probably. But another
he's another year or two away,
and
if anything.
Another first baseman, DH, another Michael Chavis, the same thing. And so this guy built up Tampa's farm system. They made great trades for Price when they traded him away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like Adames and some of those guys are coming through.
For sure.
And maybe he's going to trade Betts away and hopefully load up the farm system. But I just don't think it bodes well for the Red Sox next year. That's my own opinion. They're trying to get rid of David Price. They've offered him all over the place, but everyone says you got to take most of the money. And they figure if they're going to pay him the money, they might as well have him pitch for us rather than somebody else.
Yeah.
So this guy, I'm sure John Henry's going to be looking over his shoulder a lot.
For sure.
Because he's 36 years old. And Henry owns the thing and owns the Globe and owns everything.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion, and what the heck do I know?
Well, you definitely come across as someone who is very knowledgeable. I can personally vouch for that. But what has me curious is this. I'm a person who is a very matter-of-fact, let's cut right to the chase, no nonsense. He walks into a situation where this team is exactly 1 year removed from their best season in franchise history, winning 119 games between the regular season and the postseason, winning the World Series. And here they are, they're at a crossroads. And I was saying this as a sports writer back in the spring, writing for the Yakuway Report. And even when I first started this radio show back in early July, that the Red Sox should seriously consider trading Mookie Betts. Now, I'm at a place now where my belief is they should do that, and it's now more than ever. And before you start come crying as, look at this Yankee fan talking, of course they would want the Red Sox to trade away Mookie Betts. Listen to these very important reasons why I've been saying that since April. When they got off to the 6-13 start, you remember, Sports Professor, when they got off to that dreadful start in April.
They were on the road most of the time. It was terrible.
True. But even their record at home didn't help them at all.
No, they had a below 500 record the whole year at home.
Yeah, correct. And I was thinking, and I wrote this in an article, and I remember this vividly, and I said that if this continued, the Red Sox need to seriously start looking at trading some of their stars. And I mentioned on top of the list, Mookie Betts and JD Martinez. And I got angry reactions from Red Sox fans on social media. But as the season progressed, and especially as the July 31st trade deadline came and went, it turned out I was right. And now you have the new guy in Bloom, who I mentioned, listen, we have some critical decisions that they're going to have to make. You heard the owners come out during the final weekend of the regular season say, hey, you know what? We need to get under the luxury tax here. So what does that mean? Well, allow me to explain. It means they're going to be looking to cut payroll. And if you're looking to cut payroll, that means you cannot possibly consider giving Mookie Betts a long-term deal, especially for the money that he's looking for. There's no way. That, and on top of that, JD Martinez, 32 years old, still in the prime of his career, but let's face it, he also commands a lot of money. So you're going to be looking to move on from a lot of the higher annual value players on this roster. And as you mentioned, David Price being one of them. And even when he decided to opt in into his current contract with the Red Sox after the World Series, I knew then that there was going to come a point in time that, listen, they may have to consider trading Price. Why? Not based on performance, but based on economics. So my question that I want to pose to you now is this. If you're Bloom, you're the new guy. You're the new guy on the block. You're new to Boston. You're new to this market. And you, when you come to this market, you understand just as well as anyone that there is championship expectations. What do you think Bloom needs to do in order to remain competitive while building up the farm system?
I would assume that he had his talk with John Henry before he got hired as to what the basic game plan was going to be. I don't think Henry's going to be paying him money not knowing what this 36-year-old kid has got in mind.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a meeting of minds there of what generally has to be done.
Hats open.
And I know they've been trying to move Price, and that's not going to happen. And J.D. Martinez has a very heavy no-trade clause, so he's very limited.
And an opt-out clause this year and next year.
He's not tradable. So Mookie's their big trade item, and you know, how much you're going to get for him, I don't know.
Yeah.
And beside it all, I thought the Red Sox made a public relations boo-boo by raising ticket prices for next year.
I heard about that. Wow.
They raised them last year after winning the World Series. You can get away with it.
Yeah.
You won the World Series. But when you're barely above 500, below 500 at home, raise the ticket prices and say you're going to cut payroll, which means the team's probably not going to be as good.
It's not going to be competitive, likelihood.
I think it was a bad time for them to pull a raise in ticket prices, but they did it.
Yeah.
I think that's a terrible move. Wrong time completely to do that.
It was just bad optics on their part, considering, and as you mentioned, the below 500 record at home, and on top of that, you talk about cutting payroll. While it is not impossible, but it is very difficult to do that and remain competitive at the same time. It just is. There have been very few teams to have been able to do that successfully. The Yankees were one of them, actually. Because you think about it.
They went under the luxury tax.
They went under the luxury tax
down, yeah.
And were still able to remain competitive.
Right.
Think about it. I'm going to give you an actual example. Go back to 2013, 2014, 2016. Those were three seasons that the Yankees didn't make the playoffs. Yet, who was at the manager's helm at the time? Joe Girardi. Remained competitive into September when many didn't even expect this team to even be competing for a playoff spot at the time. All the while, Brian Cashman, the general manager of the New York Yankees, was able to rebuild, replenish the farm system, and look where the Yankees are now.
My opinion, the best move Brian Cashman ever made was when he traded Chapman and then brought him back as a free agent.
I couldn't agree more.
He got Torres, he got a haul for him, and then re-signed him himself.
Amazing.
Brilliant move.
And it's still paying off now.
Huge.
Yeah.
He got Chapman back and got a load for him, and 3 months later re-signed him.
Exactly. And I want to add on to that. Now, Chapman can decide to opt out in just after the World Series. What he decides to do between now and then, we don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. Even if he does opt out, the Yankees, for example, again, still using as an example, they are the prime example that it can be done, but you have to know how to make the right moves. And now with this hire of Bloom as the new general manager, for those that are just tuning in, and haven't heard the news as of now, the Red Sox have officially hired the new general manager by the name of Hayne Bloom as the new GM. Comes from the School of Analytics down in Tampa. And I think it's fair to say that the Red Sox are going to be looking to go towards more of an analytical approach of building and constructing their roster. The only question that I have, and this is to open up a whole broader discussion of baseball, do you think the Red Sox moving towards an analytical approach will help them both now in the long run?
I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of analytics to begin with. I understand it's been helpful. Some pitchers have said it's been very helpful to them to pick up stuff that they didn't know about before.
For sure.
So obviously it does work. But it seems the teams that combine analytics and regular old-fashioned scouting seem to have the best results rather than going entirely analytics.
Yeah.
Nobody does straight scouting anymore. They can't do it. But the Red Sox have been using analytics the past couple of years anyway. They just might use it more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of who their free agents are going to be this year. They're losing Purcello, Moreland, Holt, Cashner. That's not a lot coming off the payroll.
Yeah.
That alone ain't going to do it.
It won't suffice, not even by a long shot. Even if you made all the right moves, and you made all the right roster decisions, it just wouldn't be enough. And it would really amaze me where if this happened, where, let's say, hypothetically, the Red Sox traded away all of their main pieces and key cogs of that 2018 World Series team, as discussed and mentioned, how quickly this team would have gone from a contender to a semi rebuild. And I know Red Sox Nation, it doesn't sound sexy or it doesn't sound very appealing, but it would be a semi-rebuild in a sense because, and I've been saying this for months now, You need your farm system to reboot in the worst way.
Now, Tampa and Oakland have been very competitive. You might say they don't have a big payroll, but they never had to reboot. They just always been cheap payroll.
Exactly.
They didn't have to cut people. They just kept signing people for $500,000 and bringing them along, and they got good bargains.
I agree.
They never had to cut down to get to that. They never got to there in the first place.
And that's the difference between them and the Red Sox. Now the Red Sox are in that predicament.
Now the cutting down makes it tough. The Dodgers got under the luxury tax. Friedman went there and got them under the luxury tax and still got them staying in first place. They won 7 division titles in a row.
Yeah.
And he got them under. So it can be done, but he didn't have to cut a lot of people. He just didn't sign some of these big people coming out, and this let the natural progression of certain people retiring kept them under.
Mm.
They didn't have to dump a lot of people, although we did dump Puig last winter, and that was a brilliant move.
It was shocking when it happened, but it turned out to be the right move.
He gave up Kemp, who got cut right away. He gave up Wood, who pitched like 2 games this year.
Yeah.
We got traded again, and the guys they got back in their farm system are in their top 10, the guys they got back from Cincinnati. Brilliant move. Those are the kind of moves that this guy's going to have to make in Boston. He's going to have to give up somebody and score on getting back some top minor leaguers that are cheap and good.
The only question is, and I want to end this segment on this point, is do you think the Red Sox have the cojones to actually pull off such a move, especially considering the market that we live in?
If Henry's adamant about getting under the luxury tax, he must have told Bloom, you got to trade some of these people. And Price and Martinez aren't going to get him anything. Mookie's the only one that will.
He's the big fish, without question.
Plus, Mookie can go to either league. I mean, he's available. National League teams would want him as much as American League teams, where Martinez has a limited trade value. He has a limited trade people that he can't go to, and he's strictly an American League player.
Mm-hmm.
I think Price might do better in the National League if you can get somebody to take him, but that's going to be tough. They're going to have to eat all that money.
For sure.
And that's not lowering the payroll. They're finally getting rid of Panda's contract this year. He's finally coming
just finally. five years after the fact.
Yeah, they're still. And Panda actually had a half-decent year in San Francisco this year, but he's finally coming off their books after all this time.
And you know what's amazing about that? It still remains to be one of the worst free agent signs that the Red Sox have ever done in their history, and that says a lot.
Well, Henry Ramirez was no great shakes either.
But he was not as bad as Panda.
No, Panda was, yeah.
Yeah.
Panda did better when he got back to San Francisco. Felt at home again. And they got the Panda Bears out again this year.
And you know what's interesting? When we talk about the worst the worst free agent signings for the Red Sox have done in recent memory, his deal has to go up there with the likes of Adrian Gonzalez. Remember the winner of 2010-2011? They go out, they get Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez. That infamous Bear and Chicken 2011 Red Sox team.
Right, but Gonzalez, like, was a very good player. He gave them a lot of good. Crawford did nothing.
But there was one problem. That big problem? Culture in the clubhouse.
Oh, it was terrible.
Absolutely.
And Agon contributed to it.
Yeah.
But he played.
Oh, without question.
He played. Crawford contributed to it and did nothing.
Yeah.
He went to L.A. and did nothing, and they had to pay him off.
Exactly. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're still going to continue to talk baseball for the start of the show. I can't help but to be excited and very amped up for the World Series. I'm a baseball fan. We started off talking about the Red Sox hire of Haim Bloom, which is still the breaking story right now in Major League Baseball. But we are going to continue a baseball conversation. That and much more coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
Adopt You As Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Keep a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright, alongside with the special guest and co-host for the show, sports professor. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I gotta read you a very special promo that was done last weekend on the air, in which this is going to be for a great cause. So tomorrow, in case if you missed last week's show, I had on the Bruin Superfan Group, the Bruin Avengers. They're going to be doing an event tomorrow at Weston Johnny's in the West End. The event is called Crazies for a Cause, Bruins themed Halloween party. And this party at Weston Johnny's will entail prizes, raffles, costumes, contests, silent auctions, and more. Come as your best Bruins alter ego, and you may be featured as the next Bruins Avenger. Tomorrow, Saturday, October 26th, begins at 2 p.m. Save the date. Join us at West End Johnny's. It's at 138 Portland Street in Boston, 02114, one block away from the Garden. And also, tomorrow, actually all day, it's a very special day for the station, in fact. They will be having what's called WMFO Live Day. So I hope everyone that's listening will enjoy this following promo about to play for the station. Promoting the day, that is tomorrow, all day live music on these airwaves. Don't miss it. Enjoy the promo.
Tune in to Tufts Freeform Radio, Saturday, October 26th, for our second WMFO Live Music Day. Start off your morning at 8 a.m. with Samantha Farrell, Corin Ashley, and Frank Rowe. Then at 9, it'll be Vicky Porter, Gary Mondello, and Janae Halstead. Followed at 10 by Sweet Wednesday, Randy Black, and If We Go It All. At noon, Larry Newman will play for you live on 91.5, followed by State of the Union, Sarah Levesque, Bird Mancini, Carissa Johnson, Adam Sherman, Katie Dobbins, Bad Marriage, and the Cast Irons. Then at 6 p.m., Tufts student bands will take over the airwaves. They're all local, and they'll all be performing live, direct from WMFO Studio A and Studio D. Starting at 8 a.m. this Saturday, October 26th, only here on WMFO in Medford.
And there it is, WMFO Live Day promo. WMFO Live Day is tomorrow morning, starting at 8 a.m. right here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. So we'll be taking phone calls right now for the next hour and a half that we're on the air at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. Now, we promised that we're going to talk about baseball in this segment, continue to talk about it, and the World Series continues tonight with Game 3. And I want to offer you the opportunity, Sports Professor, to offer your take in what has been a very surprising first two games of the World Series so far in Houston.
I was very surprised that both Scherzer and Cole lost. They didn't pitch terribly, but they got a pitch, and Houston's not hitting that well. It's going to be interesting tonight with no DH, what Houston's going to do with Alvarez and Washington with Kendrick they want the bats in the lineup, but neither one of them can feel their way out of a paper bag. Well, you saw what Kendrick did against the Dodgers. He hit all those hits, but in the field, he just stood there and let the ball go right under his glove. And Alvarez, they say in the minors, they hit him in left field, and he caught nothing. So they have to make those decisions. Are we going to take the offense or take the defense? And it's going to be interesting to see which way the managers play it. I was trying to look up to see the starting lineups tonight, and I haven't seen it. So I don't know if Kendrick or Alvarez are in for the respective teams. I think Washington's going to go with Sanchez tonight pitching. He's the guy that came off the waiver wire for nothing. Had a horrible couple of years with a worst earned run average of any pitcher over 200 innings. And he's come back to be very good all of a sudden. So we'll see how he's going to do. And, of course, Houston's going with Greinke, who has issues.
Especially in the postseason.
Well, he has social issues.
Yeah.
In the big stage is, that's why he didn't want to go to New York. He didn't want to play for the Yankees in the big pressure in this big stage. He can be a very good pitcher, but you don't know what you're going to get out of him so far. In the postseason this year, he stunk.
Sure.
And a lot of money he's getting paid. So I would expect it to be more of a higher scoring game tonight. I'm surprised Houston's bats haven't come alive at all, except for Altuve. Korea's not doing much of anything, and I'm very surprised there.
And Bregman has gone cold.
Very cold, and they need him very much.
Yeah.
Washington, it's basically been Soto and Rondon and Kendrick. I mean, nobody else in that lineup's hitting.
Actually, Adam Eaton has done damage in this series, actually.
Yeah, he tried to sacrifice the other day and blew that, but he hit a home run. I'm amazed that these major league players don't know how to bunt.
It's become a lost art, and it's sad.
They don't know how to bunt anymore. And they complain about the shift. Well, hit it opposite the shift. Why are you hitting it into the shift when the whole left side of the infield's open and nobody will hit it over there? They keep trying to hit through the shift and complain we shouldn't have a shift. I don't care if you put all nine players on one side. If a team wants to do that, can't you hit it the other way? None of them can, apparently. And they can't bunt. I'm kind of shocked.
Which amazes me, because when you look at Houston, even Washington, but when you look at these teams, especially a power laden lineup like Houston, they're not going to be known for like bunting, you know, moving base runners over and so forth. And this is why I've become increasingly frustrated with baseball in recent years, because we've gone so far away from their pure baseball tactical maneuvering of, you know what, we're not playing checkers, we're playing chess. You're gonna move your second baseman. Fine, no problem. We're gonna play a suicide squeeze. Let's see if that works. You know, like the National League, what we used to call as the National League style of play back in the day, it seemingly has just been eradicated from the game. It's all about the long ball, launch angle, and
it's everybody's strikeout or home run.
I couldn't agree. Yeah.
Now tonight, one thing Houston has an advantage. If Greinke stays in the game, he's a pretty good hitter.
Yeah.
And there's no DH tonight. Sanchez can't hit.
Mm-hmm.
Greinke has a lifetime average of .230, which for a pitcher,
that's pretty good.
Ain't bad.
Yeah.
So if he can pitch well enough to stay in the game, the guy's not an automatic out. That might give Houston a little bit of an advantage. I don't know. The fans in Washington are going crazy.
Exactly.
First time since 1933. 86
years.
They're going to go crazy down there. It's too bad these games are at night. Late at night. They don't. I grew up when World Series was in the daytime, and they sold out the park, so don't tell me they can't sell out the park. Again, they didn't have the TV ratings as high because people were at work, but I go, I'm so damn old that, that in my day, we had
you don't have to give away anything. I just want to put that out there.
We had little transistor radios, if you know what those were, little pocket-sized radios with earphones, and we'd be in school with the earplug in until the nuns caught you. Listen to the World Series during the day and be able to stay up and see the end of the game at night. I haven't seen the end of a game yet. I'm that one Houston and the Yankees had that went 4 hours and 19 minutes.
Yeah, I think you're talking about game six. I believe that was
14 pitchers or whatever. I was long gone before that ended.
you know, was one thing that I wish that today's game did not lean more towards is the home run ball. And you saw this past season,
set records.
Like there was a record set by Major League Baseball as a whole, as
and minor league too.
And minor leagues, right. Wow.
Except for the minor leagues that didn't have the new Chinese ball, didn't do it.
Wow.
All the minor leagues that had the new Chinese ball set home run records, also the most they've ever had.
Which amazes me, because one, we can go back even, heck, 15 years ago. Let's just go back 15 years ago, 2004. We know that it was like towards the end of the steroid era. You still have Barry Bonds, like at the prime of his career.
McGuire.
McGuire was gone in 04 at that point. But if you want to go back to 2000, 2001, like absolutely, let's do it. We're so far removed from the steroid era that even this year, if you were to look at just raw numbers, you would think that we're starting to go back in that direction again, because of the rate of guys who are hitting 30, 35, 40 home runs. You know, you can go and look at American League ball clubs and you see how many guys has got 30 home runs in that lineup. It's absurd.
Alonso of the Mets set the rookie record for most
home runs. Yeah.
Most home runs ever for a rookie. I think he hit 53.
53, yes.
He beat Judges, which has just happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Back in the day, way back in the day, when I was... I think the home run leader was like 19 or 20, led the league. Like 19 or 20 home runs, led the league.
Yeah.
Now they just laugh at that.
Yeah, it's laughable, whereas like you're looked at as like, oh, he's a good leadoff hitter, you know, leadoff guy who can give you 20 home runs, you know, maybe driving 85, 90 runs per year. You know, someone like a DJ LeMahieu, for example, would be a perfect player.
Perfect.
But as for the World Series itself, the first two games I've looked at and said, you know, the number one thing that shocked me the most was the timely hitting of the Washington Nationals. It's not feast or famine with this ball club. Now, I'll be honest to say, I've actually had the chance to watch this ball club a bit more in the second half than I did in the first. And one thing I've noticed that they've brought into the postseason, they have a bunch of hitters that they're not afraid to put the ball in play. Adam Eaton is one guy that comes to mind, for example. Another guy that comes to mind, Anthony Rendon, terrific situational hitter. Another guy that comes to mind, that kid Juan Soto. By the way, today's his birthday, 21st birthday.
He's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And you notice Washington does not miss Bryce Harper in his
$30
million contract.
At all.
They're better without him, and they're smart not to re-sign him, because it gave Soto and Robles a chance to play. And look what they've done.
And Robles has emerged as a legitimate defensive stalwart in center field.
Very good. He's almost to Jackie Bradley's class, almost.
Yeah. Like, given another couple more years, he'll be there. But this World Series has really shined the limelight on these guys who you may not have known about before, like Juan Soto, like unless you're a true hardcore baseball fan, which I know that you are, but for those that are out there, you didn't really know much about Juan Soto, but like if you were a real hardcore baseball fan, you knew about Juan Soto even last year and just how good this kid is.
I knew of him and saw him play, but I didn't know he was as good as he is. I didn't know. He's really good.
Yeah.
Trouble is, he knows it.
And when you know it, he plays like it. And the thing that impresses me, remember that home run he hit the other night? That ball landed on the train tracks in Houston.
Right.
That was an opposite field bomb.
You hit it to left field.
A left-handed hitter.
Hit it to left field out.
You never see that anymore, at least.
No.
And that goes to show you that when you have a young hitter who has the ability to not only pull the ball, but go the opposite field with authority and have such great command of the strike zone, it's impressive.
Very impressive. It's an interesting series. It really is. And
yeah.
They got three in a row now in Washington, right?
Tonight and tomorrow, that's if at Houston can win one of the two games, there will be a game five on Sunday.
And it's supposed to pour rain on Sunday on the whole East Coast.
Yeah.
The fans are going to get drenched on Sunday, incidentally, before we get to that.
Oh yeah. We'll get to that very shortly, but, oh, man.
They're going to get drenched.
You know, and to wrap up the World Series talk before we start talking about the Patriots, tonight is going to be a phenomenal game. Game three, first game in Washington in 86 years, and The Nationals right now, they have all the momentum in the world, and they've shown that, listen, Houston, as great of a team as they've been, they haven't been fazed whatsoever. You know, and the talk out of Houston, especially in terms of the offense, has been that, well, they're just one swing away, they're one hit away, and so forth. But the truth is, when you've gotten quality starting pitching the way that you've gotten it from Strasburg and Scherzer in the first two games, they weren't perfect, but they pitched with guts and got the Nationals out of key situations late in ball games, like the sixth and seventh innings, for example. You can't help but to think that, hey, Anibal Sanchez, remember in his last start, took a no-hitter into the eighth inning.
The Nationals have to get length out of their starters because the bullpen, except for Doolittle and Hudson, is terrible.
Yeah.
They got nobody to go to. So that's why they have trouble in the regular season, because they can't keep using starters in the relief and all that like they've done with Corbin.
And Fernando Rodney is not a trusted option either out of the bullpen.
I wouldn't give Fernando Rodney anything. Even though he shoots his bow and arrow into the sky, he's nothing. They got two bullpen guys, and Hudson got racked up last time too.
Yeah.
Doolittle saved him. But they don't have a bullpen, and they got to get the starters to go. If the starters get knocked out early, Washington's in trouble.
I agree. And last thought, what is something you're looking forward to in Game 3 tonight for the Astros? Let's face it, they're in a must-win situation in the utmost degree.
I want to see if Bregman and Correa can start to get a hit. That's my thing. Those two guys, Altuve's hitting, Springer gets some hits.
Yeah.
The big guns are Bregman and Correa, and they're not doing much.
Or even Yordan Alvarez. If
they're going to play him, we don't
yeah.
know.
Oh, that's a big if, yeah.
If they're going to play him or not. Those guys have been... You know, Bregman's like an MVP candidate this year, and he's not hitting.
I agree. And the one thing that I'm curious of, I actually want to check this out, see if they released the lineups as of yet. I'm sure they have,
because it should
be out by now.
I couldn't get it, but it should be out. I'm anxious to see if Alvarez or Kendrick are in.
Yeah, because I definitely want to see if perhaps, it looks like the lineup is not out yet, but when it is, we'll definitely give it to you. Yeah, but in the meanwhile, if Alvarez is in the lineup, you gotta hope that perhaps
nobody hits him the ball.
that he's not gonna swing through pitches that he should hit, that he normally did hit, especially in the second half of the season.
He was a great find for Houston. They got him from the Dodgers for Josh Fields, and that was one of the greatest trades.
Yeah.
LDS made in Houston. The guy's now with Baltimore. He recommended that deal.
Yeah, and now that trade has paid off on big dividends for Houston, and hopefully for the next few years to come. But we're gonna switch gears, and we gotta talk Patriots, because you know the last couple of days have been more eventful for the Patriots than it has been in the past month. Now, you may be wondering, like, wait, what the heck? What do you mean? You know, it wasn't that long ago that the whole drama involving Antonio Brown hovered over the franchise. It wasn't that long ago at all. But the last couple of days has just been so eventful in which that I can't help but we got to talk about it. One, Mohamed Sanu coming to New England in a trade with Atlanta. And two, Michael Bennett coming back off suspension, and a couple of days later, he gets traded. He's traded to Dallas for a seventh rounder that can become a sixth round pick in 2021. So, in the grand scheme of things, I'll shoot it over to you. What were some of your initial thoughts when the Patriots acquired Mohamed Sanu in a trade with Atlanta? Does that help the Patriots' offense in terms of passing down the field?
Sanudo's good. He was a third-round pick of Atlanta, and they traded him to the Patriots and got a second. In fact, they got higher than what they paid for him. He signed through not only this year but next year, so he's not going anywhere. He's good. What I'm kind of wondering is suddenly Josh Gordon's gone.
Yeah.
With a minor injury. I'm wondering if there was any more failed drug tests or what's going on there. Bennett came here saying he wanted to get a Super Bowl and play for a Super Bowl winner. That was his only reason for coming here.
For sure.
And now he's leaving the team with the best chance to go to the Super Bowl because he had it out with one of the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Not a smart move.
No, not at all.
But they keep making changes that always seem to pay off. Now, the Patriots are undefeated, but I have to qualify it a little bit. If you look at their schedule this year, the only team they played with a winning record was Buffalo. Washington hadn't won a game. Miami hasn't won a game. But they played the Jets twice. The Jets have won one game. Boy, they look terrible.
And by the way, Buffalo's for real.
I think Buffalo's a decent team.
Yeah.
And the Patriots did edge them in Buffalo. But they have not played. It's not their fault. I mean, the schedule, you get the schedule is what you get.
Exactly.
But I haven't been able to judge them as well as I'd like because I haven't seen the level of competition they're playing. The Jet game the other night, I don't know if the Patriots are great or the Jets were horrible.
Both.
Maybe that's it. I mean, you lost interest in that except to wonder what the final score was going to be after the first quarter. I mean, that was a disaster.
33-0.
The Jet quarterback had a rating of like 3.6 or some ridiculous thing. He was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
The whole Jet team was horrible, and the Patriots looked like Superman out there. And Sunday, as I said, they're playing the Browns. That's nothing to write home about either. Another team that everyone said, oh, it's going to be great. They got Beckham. They got Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
Mayfield's overrated.
Oh, man.
Beckham is great if he just shut his mouth and play ball. And they're going to be in the pouring rain Sunday. That's going to be, they say we're going to be downpour for that game on Sunday.
I'm smiling right now because you let me right into my hottest take in of this particular topic.
Go, baby, go.
Because, no, I want to get you involved, actually. And this whole narrative of the Patriots, they're 7-0, but look at who they played. And this message is directly directed at those pundits who love nothing more than to hate on the Patriots for the simple fact that, frankly, you can't blame the Patriots
for what they give you.
100%. Now, my whole premise is this. Regardless of who you play, you could play Kansas City, Oakland, Buffalo, Seattle, heck, even Chicago in five consecutive weeks. But if you still are number one in the league in points allowed per game, number one in the league in terms of pass defense, run defense, and offensively, you're among the top five or six teams in the league offensively. I mean, there's nothing more you could really do. So, like, I've always have had a strong belief that whether you have a tough schedule or a weak schedule, you play the opponents in accordance to what they bring on the field. And that's what Belichick does better than anyone else. The fact of the matter is, when you look at the New England Patriots, when you look at what they do well, and even what they don't do so well, but they find ways to max what they don't do well and not allow it to become like a glaring weakness so that when you start to face the gauntlet of the schedule, which, by the way, I'm going to read off to you in sequential order. After the Cleveland game, week 9, you ready for this?
I got Dallas and KC, I know, coming up somewhere.
Hold off on that. It is, but check this out. Week 9, Baltimore.
That's a good team.
That's a Sunday night football game, by the way.
That's a good team.
Yes, on NBC. Week 10, they have the bye. Week 11, Philadelphia in Philadelphia. That's a toss-up. Week 12, they got Dallas coming up, as you aforementioned. Week 13, another Sunday night game, this time down in Houston against the Texans.
They're a decent team.
Very good team that I 100% expect to win the AFC South, hands down.
No, I disagree with you.
Why is that?
Colts.
The Colts do present they do present a good challenge, considering that Jacoby Brissett has played extremely well.
He got the player of the week.
Yeah.
Now, the amazing thing is, not to cut you off.
No.
The Colts went into Kansas City 20-point underdogs and won, and the following week, Houston went into Kansas City and won. And Kansas City had Mahomes.
Yeah, because before Mahomes got injured,
right.
Yeah.
And the Colts and Houston both beat him in Kansas City. I was shocked.
Yeah, and that never happens because Arrowhead is one of the toughest places to play in if you're visiting the NFL. Yeah. So the reason why I mentioned Houston should win the division, not to get off topic or anything like that, because I look at the quarterback, but I also can't help but really like defensively what they bring to the table as well. The only thing that concerns me is this. The offensive line in Houston is still a problem, and it's going to get Deshaun Watson killed. Like,
he's got some good receivers.
He's got good receivers, but if his pass protection is putrid, it doesn't matter.
That's why they went out and got Tunsil, and he's got a bunch of penalties now.
Yeah.
They're all so happy to get Tunsil, but boy, he's been getting a lot of penalties.
And a lot of it is holding or like offsides. Yeah.
What are you doing? Come on, you're supposed to be an All Pro. What are you doing?
Like a lot of it, from what I'm seeing, based on just watching, is you're not getting the offensive line cadence.
What date are they here to play the Patriots? Do you have that up?
You're talking about the Patriots?
And against the Chiefs. That's here in...
That's December 8th. That's a 425 game, okay. which is a...
And Mahomes should be back by then.
Oh, he will be. 100. He'll be back by that point.
That's going to be a game I'd like to see.
Yeah, because at that point, and even now, I'm confident in saying that, listen, the AFC title game is going to be here. Okay. Unless, barring an unfathomable collapse, it's going to be here. And I expect Kansas City to come back in January after the Week 14 matchup. So you have the five-game gauntlet that's coming up after Cleveland. You have Baltimore, you got Philadelphia, you got Dallas, you got Houston, you got Kansas City.
You got some good teams coming in.
Yeah, you got some real good teams. So the real question is going to be...
The Patriots are lucky they got a bye right before...
All yeah, Week 10. Too. No, after that's after the Baltimore game, they have the bye.
Before the Big Four. That's
yes.
That's a perfect time for the bye for them.
Yeah.
Because you can get rested, get some injuries guys back. They got Harry, the wide receiver's coming back.
Yeah, Nikhil Harry?
Yeah, he's coming back. That's a perfect time to have the bye.
Yeah. And let's say if they were to go through all five of these games and win. Let's say if. And I'm not coming across as cocky or an overconfident Patriots fan. Let's say if they win all five.
They're going to be undefeated.
Yeah. What would the narrative be then nationally?
They're going to have an undefeated season and losing the Super Bowl.
Man, if that happened. let's not revisit 2007, please.
We've already been there and done that.
Yeah, like, let's not revisit 2007, like, for goodness sakes. But I tell you what. In just looking only to this Sunday's game, to strictly on this Sunday's game only, I really am amazed that Jarvis Landry has the cojones to actually say, you know what, we're going to win.
He should shut his mouth.
Why? It's like opponents don't learn.
Remember Ramsey did that with Jackson?
Oh, I remember that 2 years ago, yeah.
He spouted off how we're going to destroy them. And now he's in L.A. and not even in Jacksonville anymore.
Yeah. And what makes it worse is this. You've had teams... time and time and time again, spew out some real ridiculous talk, and it somehow trickles into the locker room of the Patriots.
And they post it on the bulletin board, and everyone gets all fired up.
Yeah.
And these people are idiots. Shut your mouth.
And you don't learn. Y'all don't learn. And I want to touch on Cleveland now, because I was telling someone the other night that Cleveland right now, hands down, has got to be the biggest disappointment in the NFL this year.
They got all that hype because they got Beckham, who's great. But I think, I'm sorry, I'm not a big Baker Mayfield fan.
I'm not either.
I mean, he's okay. He's a starting quarterback in the league and probably should be, but I don't think he's anything to write home about. That's just my opinion. I'm not a professional scout. People say to me, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. But I've just not been overly impressed. There's some moments he has that are pretty good, but he's got a big-time attitude. And I'm just not impressed with the results.
Here's the kicker. And I heard in listening to some folks in the industry who talk about, you know, looking at quarterbacks, what they bring to the table, and so forth, weeks leading up to the draft in 2018. And even when I watch college football, like here and there, but in particular, I did watch Baker Mayfield a bit when he was in Oklahoma. Attitude is a number one concern for a quarterback. I can't overstate this enough for all of those that are listening, the attitude of a quarterback will have a negative impact on everything and everyone else in the locker room. It will, because you're looked upon as the leader. How are you going to act when things are going good? And how are you going to act when things are